Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Slide 5. It's rainy, it's raining in the Midwest, but we are going to be connecting with sunny California and a wonderful man I met in the Southwest down in Phoenix at Women Noble Business, Keeper Patron Whitney, and I hope I pronounced his name correctly. He's the founder and CEO. I'm sure he'll tell me the correct way in a minute here. He's the founder and CEO of Nexus Worldwide Media and Entertainment Group and the CEO of DirectSellingLive.com. And he's a dynamic man. We saw each other at two different events in the last couple of months. Keeper, hello. Are you with us?
Brenda, I'm doing great, and you nailed the last name.
Okay, Whitney was correct, but how do you pronounce the first name?
You got Katrin right, yeah.
Katrin Whitney. Okay, Katrin Whitney. Awesome. Well, Keeper, I just liked your energy when I met you at Women Building Bridges and was delighted to see you again at Motivating the Masses with Lee Nichols in San Diego. And so we experienced a couple of events that I think both of us resonated with. Lisa's methods and her ability to tell a story and to teach others how to tell a story and not show a story. So I'm looking forward to talking with you today about that because you have been around the media and entertainment industry for a long time as well as the display industry. And I was so tickled to see in your bio that you were a member of the Whitney family.
If I could just interrupt here for a second, you're breaking up pretty bad, and I'm getting just bits and pieces of what you're saying or possibly even asking. So I don't know that that I will be clear or be able to answer exactly what you're asking because the connection is pretty bad.
Okay,
I'm not quite sure what you asked. I think something to do with getting in the entertainment industry?
That's correct.
Oh, okay, okay. We got started, my family and I, here in Southern California, L.A. area, in music around the early 1970s. We were pretty poor growing up, and we had quite a few challenges growing up. We could not pay rent. There were four boys, four girls, my mom and my stepdad. We could not pay rent. Any number of places that we lived. So because of it, we were evicted a number of times. We were homeless a number of times, no place to go. However, my mother had a background as a singer, and one day she just heard us, like most parents do, their kids singing around the house, and asked if we wanted to sing. And so we said we would love to. And the next thing you know, the Whitney family was formed, and we went on to perform together for some 20 years. Even as we constantly went through all of our challenges. We were with United Artists Records, Warner Brothers, just as we were getting ready to sign the biggest deal Motown ever offered. They got a new president who came in and put a halt to everything. And so even with that, we had the opportunity to travel parts of the world and sing and perform. We sang, we played instruments. I was a drummer for a long time. And that's how I got into the music industry and have loved it ever since.
Wow. And are you still performing in any kind of musical way?
Can you say that again?
Are you still performing in any sort of musical way?
No, the last time we actually performed was around 2000. There was a direct selling company that I was with at the time called Envion International, and we had some pretty challenging moments inside our house, as you know, and anyone who heard me talk about it at Lisa Nichols Speak and Write, and it that kind of fragmented us in a major way to the point to where a number of the of my seven siblings just stopped talking to each other. It was just so traumatic. And what I was able to do after years of some of people not talking to each other, I was able to get just about everyone together to perform at this national convention. That was the last time that we actually performed together. Hello.
I'm here.
Okay. All right. I just heard some stuff. So that was the last time. Other than me being in direct selling and using my knowledge of entertainment marketing, I just absolutely love everything to do with entertainment and entertainment marketing. That is the extent of my entertainment career. I am just, you know, uniquely qualified to bring forward entertainment and sports marketing strategies because of all my years in entertainment and because of my love of direct selling. So that's how things have shaped up until this point.
Well, I just want to talk a little bit about your ambassador concept. I just found that on your website tonight. I love that concept about, you know, bringing hope to others that they can overcome any situation, any, whether it's a financial situation, whether it's their childhood, whether it's I have advice to read that you are a clinic server. Whatever condition people find themselves in, that their external environment does not determine their success. Can you talk about your story? Because it's a powerful story. And the whole point of Alive to Thrive is to share with my listeners stories of hope, stories of resiliency and courage, and focus on people like yourself who did not let their circumstances limit their dreams.
Yeah, sure. I think you asked about my website that's in development. My keeper, KatherineWhitney.com. I just want to make sure that that's what you asked about because I don't want to go someplace that you didn't ask. So am I correct? Okay. The Ambassador of Hope. Brenda, I have realized over the years that everything starts with hope. Everything that you could possibly imagine, everything that you could possibly dream about, everything that you could possibly wish for, starts with hope. And as I looked around, there's a lot of discussion about an abundance mindset, a prosperity mindset, but I've come to realize that before you can even get there, before you can even comprehend abundance or prosperity, you have to believe that there's hope for you in order to even get to that point. So I know from my life growing up, being on the streets, being homeless, going through situations where my stepdad molested my sisters, and I found the courage to rise to their defense. All of that required the hope that I can do something, that I could make something happen, that I could bring something positive to the situation. And so as I looked around, I said, you know what? there aren't very many people that talk about hope in the sense of hope is an extremely powerful four-letter word. I was just talking to someone the other day about the most powerful four-letter word, and most people will come to the conclusion that love is the most powerful four-letter word. I used to think that, but not anymore. I think hope is the most powerful four-letter word because you can have love, rather you can't even get to love without the prospect of hope that it could even happen for you. So I think hope is the most powerful word. And so I decided that my talk as a speaker, as I begin to create this, was going to be about being an ambassador for hope. I looked at what is it that politicians and what is it that religious leaders talk about, because from the standpoint of being able to have something tangible, oftentimes they don't. They have hope and to offer. And here in direct selling, what is it that we as a community, what is it that distributors offer any prospect? They offer hope. It's that simple. Everything boils down to the hope that your prospect can either better their health, better their lifestyle, better their pocketbook. Everyone is looking for an opportunity to increase who they are and what they're about, but it all starts with hope. And so that's why I decided to take on the title of Ambassador of Hope, because I know a lot about hope. It's my life.
That.
My life
and,
was
and
just.
I mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you about the 12 immutable laws of hope that you have on your site there. Can you just take a couple of them and expand upon those?
Yeah, let's start with the very first one. It is about you. Oftentimes you will have people say, well, it's not about you. It's got to be about someone else. Well, in some instances that is true, but in others it is absolutely wrong. And this is why I say it is about you. You can't be there for someone else unless you are there for yourself first. You cannot offer anything of real long-lasting value unless it is about you. You have to come into yourself and find out what it is that you need that will make you, that will lift your self-esteem, that will allow you to view yourself as a person. About 10 years ago or so, after going through a lot of the stuff that we went through growing up, there were days when I found it difficult to like me. But then I realized, you know what? I like me. I like me a lot. I like everything about me. And if people don't, then oh well. But from that point on, I was better. I was a better man, which allowed me to be a better husband, allowed me to be a better father, allowed me to be a better friend. So it really is about you. That is the underlying premise for everything that you want to do going forward. You just can't be there for someone if you are not there for yourself first. The other laws basically boil down to you've got to release yourself from the past. It wasn't until I was able to release myself from the past that it wasn't until I was able to do that that I was able to be better for me. But our past pulls us back so often, and more importantly, someone else's past who you've glommed onto or who have really embedded that into your thinking, someone else's past is defining your future. It cannot be. So you need to let the past go. That's not to say that you forget, Brenda. That's just to say put it in a box, put a little bow on it, and set it off to the side. You may need to call on that from time to time. You can use it as a motivating factor. It could be the tip of the spear that allows you to move forward in hope. So you have to release yourself from the past. The other, hopefulness is real. Oftentimes people will look at hopefulness and say, well, that's just kind of pie-in-the-sky stuff. Well, no, it's not. Moving forward in a hopeful manner means that you are just that. You are moving forward. There is a sense of expectation that comes along with hope. If you don't have hope, And we've all heard it said before, and it's oftentimes a throwaway phrase, if you don't have hope, you don't have nothing. And that is absolutely correct, because the people that are without hopefulness are lost. They don't know what's going on with their life. And I don't use this as a platform for any kind of religious speaking or anything like that. To me, hopefulness is the thing that drives all expectation. And it's interesting, I was I talked to my father-in-law, and he's a very successful businessman, and he is not one to get into the faith and those kind of things. But my comeback was, if you moved out in an effort to be successful and you have absolutely nothing in your past that will tell you that you were going to be successful, the only thing you had going for you was hope. You just had to believe that that was going to happen for you. So he had hopefulness in his life. You got to give yourself permission to dream. You know, I started a lot of this stuff with people laughing at me. And, you know, I go forward as I go forward with the resources that I don't have, but I go forward. But I've given myself permission to dream. I think that's critical. If you don't give yourself permission to dream, you can bet no one is going to do the dreaming for you. It's just not going to happen. They will dream around you. They will dream over you. They will dream under you. But very few people will give you permission to dream that's sustainable except yourself. Someone might see something in you. They might see possibilities in you. But unless you give yourself permission to dream, to hope that it can happen, it's just not going to manifest itself. So
I love that. I love that. A couple of things that you were saying about hope and about permission to dream. Do you find that those are two of the strongest qualities that attract people to the direct selling industry, because the direct selling industry is so based on permission to dream, dreaming again, it's safe to dream again, like Joe Morton of Zango often says, it's safe to dream again, and to provide hope for people that are just so discouraged by traditional workplace mentality?
Yes, absolutely. I've been in direct selling now for almost 18 years in some form or another. And what attracted me in the beginning, which is probably the same thing that attracts everyone else, is the dream that something can happen. And then you start to think, okay, I hope this can work. I could see myself doing that. And just that mindset is a mindset of hopefulness. So Joe Morton is absolutely correct. It's okay to dream. Absolutely. You need to give yourself permission to dream. Because once that happens for you, possibilities open up. Possibilities that you've never even thought of. And it's interesting, your whole aspect changes. Your body language changes. People will look at you and say, wait a minute, what happened to that fella over there? Or what happened to that girl over there? You can say, you know what, I'm no longer at that point. I have moved forward. I am at this point, and I'm going forward with the expectation that everything's going to happen just great for me. Will I have challenges? Of course you will. Absolutely you'll have challenges, but as Joe Morton says, and most direct sellers will absolutely tell you, and they are correct, you have got to move forward with the expectation that my dreams will come true.
Oh, I'm sorry. That just cut off. I was asking you to share some of the extreme challenges that you've witnessed in the last 18 years of people that have overcome some of the challenges of the industry, because as we know, people sometimes spend too much time saddling up, researching the industry, reading the books, reading the scientific studies, never jumping in, or the other extreme, maybe they get too excited too fast and they don't learn their own compensation plan on how to explain it. But what are some of the challenges you've seen, the typical challenges, and then what are some extreme challenges that you've seen people overcome? Keeper, are you with me?
Hello?
Hello, are you with me?
Yes, hello.
Hello, I'm here.
I'm here. I hear you.
Okay, did you hear my question?
You asked about the challenges that the average distributor has, and then what are some of the extreme challenges that I've seen in the past or currently see?
Exactly. If you can talk about challenges that people have overcome, typical challenges, but then so what are the extreme challenges that some distributors you've seen come back from challenges and conquer them and go on to be very successful?
I think the most typical challenge is a person just goes out so fast and never takes the time to get settled in what their message is. I believe you mentioned they get so caught up in wanting to read the technical documents, or they want to get all the training down. They want to get the exact language for getting that prospect to join. There is no exact language. What tends to happen is people forget their most powerful tool in their prospecting toolbox, and that is telling their story. There is no more powerful tool in telling your story. We've all seen, when we've gone to the movies, the movie trailer, where they've got 2 to 3 minutes to pull you in. What happens is there's such an emotional transfer that gets you excited. A person's story is the thing that, in my opinion, needs to be the most prevalent part of their presentation. A person will give you 5 minutes to tell your story, and your story has to be one that's vulnerable. You have to be willing to share why you got into the business. Oftentimes people think that their story doesn't matter. Your story does matter, and there's a difference between features and benefits in telling your story versus your upline story or versus your company story. Your story, which is where people really trip up, they don't tell their story. They're so keen on getting to the money. They're so keen on selling the product that they don't do this. Your story is what transfers emotion to the person that you're talking to. They can live their life through you for that short period of time and then see the hope for their future through you. Now, they're not going to share what it is about them. They're just not going to do it. They're not going to say, oh, yeah, you know what? This happened to me. That happened to me. My life is such a crap over here and crap over there. They're just not going to do it. Your story needs to be able to do that, and it's a benefit to them because it allows them to see themselves in the picture. If you tell your upline story, you tell your company story, all that's well and good, but your company and upline is not in front of them. So it's a feature. It's just something you get later on. It's something that may happen on a three-way call. This is where I think most people in direct selling have made the mistake. They are dependent so much on technology. They're dependent so much on getting their company's documentation in front of them. We have this in our product. We have that in our product. No. We are an industry of telling stories, and we are an industry of offering hope. You will see throughout the history of direct selling, and if I just go back as far as 1850 to when Southwestern Company came around, 1886, Avon, and then all the others who started to roll in after that, there is tremendous history of people who have overcome tremendous obstacles just because they were able to share their story. You cannot forget the importance of your story. If we just look at Zango, for instance, you've got Carolyn Johnson, whose story is it's just an amazing story of overcoming challenges and obstacles. But her success is rooted in her storytelling because the story provides hope for opportunity for someone to do the same thing. That is the biggest challenge for direct sellers, is getting back to telling the story. That's what we do best. In that regard, direct selling is very much like religion, and it's very much like politics. They just tell a story in hopes that you come with them. The same thing happens here. Tell your story so people can come with you. And then you go on to what it is that's going to allow them to achieve that happiness state, something I call going from helplessness to hopefulness, to happiness. That's what takes place right there. At this point, they're helpless. Now, here's the hopefulness through your story and how the two can deliver happiness for them, and hopefully that your product and opportunity can help them achieve that. So that's the biggest thing.
I love that, and I love that you mentioned Carolyn Johnson's story, because so many people look at million-dollar earners like Carolyn Johnson and Barbara King-Schmidt and other successful folks. Like in Zango, we have about 130 now millionaires that have been made in the last 10 or 11 years. And they look at these people that have achieved success, and they only see the end result. They don't know that Barbara, for example, was a single mother with three kids, that she got into direct selling to just have money to buy shoes for them, that Carolyn was a single mother in her 50s and had been, had been in the corporate industry, had been in corporate America, and then had, after that, her own event planning business, much like myself. And that these women started at ground zero, that everybody that's been successful in direct selling and network marketing started at ground zero. And I love that you said that, you know, it is sharing your story and demystifying, your own, where you are and also where other people have achieved, because people only see the outside features. They don't know the backstory. They don't know the backstory. And I think that's something that Lisa Nichols really taught from the stage, and something I took away, is not to hide our vulnerability, not to hide our pain, not to hide the difficult things we experienced as children, but to bring that pain forward, that people will get you. They'll understand that you're not speaking from the mountaintop, you're speaking from the pain. And she just drove that point home to me in such a way that I changed the way I told a story yesterday. I spoke to a group of professional women at the Women's Power Networking lunch here in St. Louis, and I shared some personal things that I had never shared before. I was in a car crash 16 years ago where my mother was killed and I was cut out of the car, and I had not opened that box of that car accident, labeled car accident, all the paperwork from the lawyers, from the police report, the autopsy report. I had not looked in that box in 16 years. And I said, okay, it's time. It's like the boogeyman was living in the basement. That box was like a haunted box for me, but I opened it up. It's just words on paper. It didn't have the power, to hurt me anymore, because I can look at it and say, wow, I can't believe I walked away from that accident, that I am walking today, and that I'm not in a wheelchair and I'm not permanently disabled. What a miracle is that, Tom?
Yep.
So I love that you were so brave at the Lisa Nichols Speak and Write to Make Millions event there in San Diego just a couple of weeks ago. They came out into the audience, and somehow Susie Carter zeroed in on you, or maybe you raised your hand and shared something. I forget how that chain of events actually started, but you were kind of put on the spot there, Keeper. What did that feel like?
Well, I was put on the spot. I was raising my hand, but let me say something about what you just commented on first. The difference in one of the things that Lisa talked about was the difference between telling a story and showing a story is absolutely critical that people understand. Telling is more of an informational type of exchange. Showing is, in my opinion, a transformational change. And you talked about speaking at this group the other day, and you brought up some stuff that you hadn't talked about before. And it's not only good for the person who's speaking, because it helps them get through some things, but it transforms people who are listening, who are watching, because they can see the emotion coming out. They're able to absorb the emotion. So at the Lisa Nichols thing, that was a very, very powerful situation for me. I had raised my hand. She was doing a demonstration on the layout of how to write a book in about 20 minutes, and I raised my hand, and I wasn't getting acknowledged, even though Susie had taken a quick glance. And then I said, I have a question. And pretty much like that. And then she said, okay, let's get to your thing. I said, okay, what you're talking about here appears to be something of a layout for a how-to book. How does that work for someone who doesn't have a how-to book? And then it snowballed from there. Next thing you know, I'm talking about the experience of my father-in-law, my stepdad molesting my sisters, and I finally having enough of it and going up to this guy, 6'6", 220, 30 pounds, and telling him that if you are here by this time tomorrow, you will be dead because I will have killed you. I just felt that I needed to step in and protect my sisters. The time had arrived and protect my mother, who was being beaten as well. But I was willing to put my life on the line. I was willing to end it all so that they could experience some happiness going forward. Once again, feeling helpless because you were intimidated physically, emotionally, and mentally for years. And then getting to the point where I felt that if I did something, I could, you know, bring some hope to them. Once again, helplessness to hopefulness. And then getting him either out of the house one way or another, I had already determined how it was going to go down the next day, that they would have some happiness in their life. And it just, that turned into a pretty big emotional moment at Lisa Nichols Speaking Right. And it was amazing because it goes back, Brenda, to what you and I are talking about, the need to be vulnerable. Now, some people might not need to be as vulnerable as I am. I am more than willing to do it because I think me sharing things like this can help other people. But the flood of people contacting me to tell me thank you, and the number of women saying there was no keeper there for me, there just was no hero there for me, it just became a very difficult time for me emotionally. But it was all about the story, and I think that's what we don't want to lose sight of. It was about the story I was willing to share. And next thing you know, I've got over 300 people who are willing to help me write this book. And it's just been absolutely amazing. Now, we all know that there are many people in direct selling who have stories. What tends to happen, and it's not just in direct selling, I think everyone has a story. One of the projects that I have is the 100 Million Voices Project, which is to tell the stories of first contact in direct selling. But everyone has a story. Oftentimes, a couple of things happen. You think your story is not important enough, so you don't tell anyone. You think your story is going to compromise you because you may need to share some things that you have already tucked away and you don't ever want to talk about. The other part is you think your story is just going to be too much, and it may cause you more pain than good. I have found that the more I talk about my story, and I'm talking about it more and more and more, the more people look at it and say, you know what, that happened to me. You're not alone. You're not the only one that this has happened to. And I think that's the greatest part of sharing your story. It allows people to say, I'm not alone. It brings hope to them. It lets them know that as I move forward, there can be a better outcome for me, because it's been a better outcome for, say, Brenda here. It's been a better outcome for Keeper here. You become a hero. You become a linchpin for them at that point. You become an anchor for them, something that they can look back on at any given moment and say, okay, Brenda did it. I now know her story. Carolyn has done it. I now know her story. Barbara has done it. I know her story. And if any time you think you can't achieve something, if someone else is doing it and they are successful at it, guess what? You can do it. And you can bet they had some challenges.
Wow, that's awesome. Man, that just really powerful. It gave me goosebumps. We're going to take a short break for a public service announcement and station identification. We're going to continue our dynamic conversation with Keeper Katrin Whitney of DirectSellingLive.com and the founder and CEO of Nexus Worldwide Media and Entertainment Group. This is a powerful, powerful interview, and we had some technical glitches, so thank you for everyone that's stuck it out and stuck with us. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
You might know me. I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger is too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Frazier on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Live to Thrive. We're talking with Keeper Katrin Whitney of DirectSellingLive.com. He's just done so many different things in his life through the entertainment industry, through the media industry, and the direct selling industry. And he's an incredibly dynamic personality. He's writing a book about his story that will change and touch so many lives. And we were talking about the importance of being vulnerable to tell your story. Keeper, I'd love for you to share also on using video to maximize your story and also to help bring some revenue in as you're going through the process of sharing stories. You know, how can people create some revenue for themselves by sharing their story through video and through online technology?
Okay. Let me go back about 45 years when I was in fifth or sixth grade. I used to listen to the radio a lot because, you know, during chores and stuff, I didn't want to be bored, so I'd listen to the radio. Typically what I listened to was talk radio. We had Dr. Tony Grant back then who had a great show, or I would listen to Bob Miller, who was the announcer for the Los Angeles Kings, or Vin Scully, the Hall of Fame broadcaster for the Dodgers. But the person I loved listening to the most was the late, great Chick Hearn, who was broadcaster for the Lakers. And he said something in the great broadcasters and the great storytellers do this. And this is why, even for someone like yourself who really understands the power of radio, Chick Hearn would say, okay, welcome to, for instance, the Lakers versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm going to give you your word's eye view of the game. That stuck with me. I'm going to give you my word's eye view. So he's got to pretend that you are watching television and deliver the game in such a way that you can sense everything on the floor happening. Every great broadcaster does that. And it pulls you in emotionally. which is outstanding. You just feel like you're there at the game. The Bob Miller was absolutely great with the Kings. Vin Scully to this day is great with the Dodgers. I would watch as a little kid. I would watch back then, because you didn't have that many black news broadcasters. I would watch the white news broadcasters broadcast. I wanted to see how they sat up. I wanted to see what they did with their clothing, how they would tuck it. If he's in a suit, he tucks it down underneath. It sits on it so that jacket never wrinkles. I watched how they would use their hands. And so I dreamt of the day that I would be a speaker like them. And so I needed to learn, you know, how they used their hands, never pointing their fingers and things like this. But they only had a few minutes, Brenda, to give you a very powerful story. They had about 3 to 4 minutes. Just about every segment in news is about 3 to 4 minutes. So fast forward to technology and direct selling. Oftentimes people will do their presentation on their website. They'll have a blog, and they'll talk about the business opportunity and all of these great things, which is well and good. It's a feature. It's not a benefit, because the person is typically not going to say, I get this, because you're talking about how much XYZ is in that particular pill. Using video can be extremely powerful in selling the product or bringing in prospects, because you're going to tell your story. You can tell your story and also add imagery to it through some pictures of your life that kind of really maximizes what you're saying. As a person begins to understand that you are willing to share, to be authentic, to have integrity, and just say, this is who I am, people are drawn to you like a magnet. It's much easier to sell just about anything if you tell your story. With video, they can see the emotion on your face. They can see the emotion in your body language, which is why the best people who sell products today use video for that very purpose. They use it to let people see who they are, because it's one thing, as you know, to be on a commercial and it's just a voice there. But when you can see the person behind it, you see yourself in them, which is why technology today, because of video through YouTube and any number of other things, allows you to tell an incredibly powerful story that pulls people into your business opportunity or sell your product. You must use video, but you must lead out with the telling of your story. I just finished up a story on air. One of the things on Direct Selling Live, I have an online television show. I've done and told over 500 stories. My most recent one is about an 83-year-old great-great-grandfather who wants to start his own direct selling company, not be a distributor, but start his own company. But as he told the story and as we talked about it, he mentioned how up until this point, his life has been an utter failure. And it's important that he leave something behind for his great-great-grandchildren and his great-grandchildren and his grandchildren and his kids. And so as we pull out this tapestry that he's being able to share, one of the things that we found out, of course, and was listening to it, that he's a tremendous stutterer. And I, being a stutterer, at times it's quite humorous to watch the two of us go back and forth. But that's just being vulnerable. I don't mind stuttering. And oftentimes people will say, and the reason why I bring this up, my hair doesn't look good. I don't like the way my skin looks. Oh, no one's going to like how I look. Trust me, people don't care. People care about your story. And video allows that to happen, breaks down all of that.
Yes, and I think with smartphones now, more and more people are having smartphones, and they can make some video very easily with smartphones and with flip cameras. I got into making videos with flip. I think some people that are not comfortable with technology are afraid to try it, and I'm always telling, especially women, look, you can't break it. Just get a flip, try it on your phone, try it, play with it, do it. Try it first with friends. You know, just
yep.
like Skype technology, it surprises me how many people are not using Skype
yep.
when it's such a great way to have meetings with people all over the world, all over the country, or even locally without having to get in your car, fight traffic, pay for gas, pay for parking. There's wonderful technology that if we use it in smart ways, like you said, to keep the human story front and center and use videos to help spread stories and spread hope, then, you know, it's another way to build community. And we're living in a global community. There is a man named Peter Diamandis, D-I-A-M-A-N-D-I-S. Have you heard of him? He started the X Prize Foundation. And he has a fantastic, he calls them espresso shots. They're 2-minute videos that he sends out about abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, wonderful little tips about different topics. But he was saying that in 2010, I think it was 2 billion people had access to the internet. And by 2020, it will be 10 billion people. And we're talking about parts of the world like Africa where they have now cell phones or computers in places where they don't even have running water, but they have technology.
That's right.
So it's changing the way we relate to everyone. And I think ultimately it will really help, especially people in America who don't really often think too often about people in other countries and what they're experiencing sort of, you know, what they're suffering with as well, with hunger and lack of clean water and lack of even just shoes, basic things we take for granted in this country.
Right.
I think through things like video and through things like the internet, we're going to be able to create more of a global community so that people will care, people will reach out, people will respond when there's a request to support something. I personally started with a woman locally here in Missouri, an orphanage in Uganda, and she had a powerful story. You were talking about stories. When this woman came to me a few years ago to help her with fundraising, she had no mailing list. She had no board of directors. She had no 501c3. She just had a big dream and a big vision, and her parents were taking care of 54 orphans in her village in northern Uganda, an area that does not get the aid that Kampala gets. And she really didn't know where to begin. But I said, tell me about the children. And I honestly, when she was first referred to me, I thought, oh, gosh, I had just sworn off, you know, giving away my time for free and continuing to advise people about fundraising. But something about her captured my heart. When she started telling me about the children, their dreams to be teachers, police officers, I mean, things that, you know, I could relate to, but these kids couldn't get education beyond a certain grade, especially the girls. And, you know, they didn't have even shelter or, you know, basic things, food, clothing, anything, clean water. They walked 2 miles to get clean water. So I said, you know what? What you have is your story. Let's get you out there
just telling your story. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, just from telling her story at Rotary Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs, church groups, all these different places, you know, she found board members, she found someone to help build a mailing list. She, you know, we got her 501c3. We found even an architect who donated her services to help design the orphanage for over there. And, you know, and so, you know, people that got involved and gave money and supported her dream might not ever go to Uganda and see the end result, but they had a feeling that they were responding to this incredible story that was so authentic, so sincere, so real. And, you know, it just made everyone feel good that they could do their small part. So tell us about this 1 Million Voices project. I didn't get a chance to look that up, but it intrigues me, the 1MillionVoicesProject.com. What is that, Keeper?
Well, you actually are leaving off a few zeros, but one thing there is a technology thing that is extremely powerful, if I can just mention it, because you had talked about from Skype to things like this, and you're absolutely correct. People think they may break something. I think that's more of a generational thing than anything, but Google Hangouts allows up to 10 people to come into a Google Hangout live and you can take that live broadcast and embed it into your website. So you can invite thousands of people to watch this conversation take place. Let's say, for instance, you want to have a Google Hangout, and you want to have Aaron Garrity, Joe Morton, Beverly Hawthorne. You can have them all come in, and you can show this live event for free with a Google Hangout that can go out to thousands of people. All they need to go to, all they need to do is go to your website. The technology is just, it's just happening so fast. 100 Million Voices Project. About 6 years ago, I got to thinking, because I love stories. I love the story of direct selling. I love all of it, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful, because we are a living, breathing community. That's what we are. We have highs. We have lows. We are happy. We have disappointments. We are a microcosm of what the world is. Oftentimes, we think we live in a bubble, but we don't. So I got to thinking, you know what? Over the past couple of hundred years, even just going back to 150, Southwestern Company, we've touched the lives in some form or fashion of hundreds of millions of people. We prospected. Someone has been given a gift of a lipstick, a pancake flipper, something. We've come in contact with hundreds of millions of people. So the 100 Million Voices project at 100millionvoicesproject.com is sharing any story of first contact, whatever it was, whatever it is, because that ultimately becomes a library of stories that anyone in direct selling can point a prospect to say, look, here are millions of stories of how people came in contact with direct selling, how it may have changed their life. Oftentimes it's just for one company on their one website. I look at things globally. How can I help the global community of direct selling? So the 100 Million Voices is all about that. Share your story. I will quickly tell you my very first contact. My mother went on a singing tour in 1968. And my grandmother always had this recliner that sat in the living room. And on one side, she could reach on one arm, and there was a Sears catalog. On the left-hand side, there was another catalog, and she's always ordering from it. I'm about 9 or 10 years old. I don't know what the heck it is. But she's always ordering something, and every few days, something comes in. That's in late 1968. I didn't find out till maybe 8 years ago, right before she had passed away, that she was looking at an Avon catalog. I had no idea. She was always wrapping stuff up. She was taking it to her friends, and up until she died 3 months prior, 89, she was still delivering her Avon product to her customers. That was my first contact. Because we were very poor, my mother and I would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, gather up all the laundry in the house from a month, because we couldn't pay for it. We didn't have a laundromat. But we would go to a laundromat with 10 to 12 leaf and lawn bags full of dirty clothes for 10 people. We had to do that for years. One day I came home from school, and she was so happy she couldn't wait for me to get home because she found this new soap. Like, okay, I'm in the seventh grade. Why in the heck am I excited about soap? Because this one cap of soap could wash 2 to 3 loads of clothes. And her laundry buddy, me, had to be excited too. Well, it turns out it was Amway's SA-8. You know, that's a story. You know, that's a story. Because
I love that. And I love that, you know, so many products and things now that are common household items, people do not realize were brought to us through the direct selling industry, whether it is a new type of soap, a new type of makeup, a new type of, bottled water. Bottled water, I heard, brought to us through direct selling. The aloe, you know, 30 years ago, no one knew about aloe. Everyone thought it was just this, you know, fun-looking plant in the Southwest. Now aloe is in everything from lotion to toilet paper, and now
yeah.
mangosteen. And Bango brings mangosteen to market 10 years ago. Never, no one in the U.S. had heard about it, but everyone in Asia knew about it. And, you know, I'm now
but
seeing
you know
what's really cool
about the whole mangosteen thing and about stories.
Oops, I think we just lost Keeper right in the middle of a great story. Hopefully he'll call back. We only have a few more minutes left here on Alive to Thrive. We're down to our last 5 minutes. We could definitely be talking for another hour with Keeper, Catherine Whitney, founder and CEO of Nexus Worldwide Media and Entertainment Group, and CEO of DirectSellingLive.com. Check out that website. It is full of content. You can get a free membership and profile there. All kinds of content. He shares freely lots of content and lots of wisdom that he's learned over 18 years being in the direct selling industry and over 30 years of being in the entertainment industry. And Keeper, I think you're back with us now. We lost you for
a
brief second.
Yeah, just quickly, one of the great things about Zango is you guys are constantly telling the Joe Morton story. I mean, it is front and center. You have not wavered. That story is so incredibly powerful, but it's what allows people to get a sense of what Zango is all about. Just a little brief story about my grandmother and my mother. That's a story that someone could say, I used to go through that. And so this is why stories are so important. This is one of the reasons why Zango does a good job, better than most companies, because they're constantly telling the Joe Morton story. And it allows the prospect to go on the ride with you. And then they say, you know what? I can do this. I'm with you, and I want to give it a try because you just provided hope for them, from helplessness to hopefulness to happiness. That's the journey.
Wow, and you said it in a nutshell. And Joe Morton's story is one of those stories, like you said. It's a very visual story, being
mm-hmm.
over in Malaysia and discovering the mangosteen and learning more about the science through his brother, David,
yep.
who did the research and the Medline search. And it's on YouTube. And I love the fact that YouTube is such an incredible community of storytelling, and anyone can start out by sharing their story either
yeah.
through YouTube or on Facebook or through one of the many social media outlets that are out there. In our last couple of minutes, one prediction for the future in the next, say, year or two that you see for the direct selling industry. What do you see coming, new trend?
I think the thing that's coming is what we're talking about, the convergence of stories and being able to use video as a powerful medium to deliver the direct selling message, be it for a company or be it for a distributor. There is no question that the industry as a whole needs to take advantage of that. I also believe that as we become more entrenched into conversations publicly, culturally, socially, politically, direct selling will become a very, very powerful voice in those areas as a whole, which will allow direct selling to get some cover when it comes to things that we need to have taken care of and addressed on the political side. We saw this begin to take place in 2012 as a number of direct selling companies got involved into the political conversation, and that's an outstanding situation for direct selling. We will be able to accomplish a lot more. The sky's the limit still. I don't think we've even begun to tap the possibilities of direct selling. We haven't even scratched the surface yet because there's oftentimes too much focus on me, my company. The best thing that we can do, and I think that this is coming, is to move forward whenever possible as a global community. And in that way, the public at large begins to see us differently. I'm also beginning to notice, Brenda, that the bubbling up of foundations that support different events around the globe begin to form. Oftentimes, we see companies do it, which is great. But now foundations are being developed that speak for direct selling as a whole, which is another way pushing back against any kind of negative stigma that we may have. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. Certainly with the DSA, I believe companies like Zengo and others will begin to come together collectively to make sure that some of those issues are addressed, not just from a company standpoint, but as an industry standpoint. It will just open up so many more things for us.
Wow. Thank you so much. I wish we had another hour. There's so many more topics to cover that I wanted to talk to you about. So we'll have you on again in the future, Keeper. Thank you so much. Good luck with the book, and hope to see you at another Sangaroo or at least a Rickles event in the coming months and the coming years. So thank you. Have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you so much for having me.